In the story of American literature, Malcolm Cowley stands as one of the most influential yet least understood figures of the 20th century. A poet, critic, editor, and advocate for writers, Cowley helped shape the canon we read today. His work at the New Republic, his editorial guidance at Viking Press, and his friendships with literary giants like Hemingway, Fitzgerald, and Faulkner placed him at the center of American modernism. Yet Cowley's own career was marked by exile, reinvention, and quiet determination. In the new book, The Insider, Malcolm Cowley and the Triumph of American Literature, editor and critic Gerald Howard brings this complex literary life into focus, drawing on Cowley's letters, essays, and archival material. Howard reveals how one man's sensibility helped define what we now consider American literature. Again, the title of the book is The Insider, Malcolm Cowley and the Triumph of American Literature. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Gerald Howard to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you.
Delighted to be here to talk about my book and anything else you want to.
Okay, well, we'll see how we go through the list here. You retired as executive editor and vice president of Doubleday in 2021. At what point did you start to think that this was something that you wanted to do, of write this book about Malcolm Cowley?
It was actually 2 or 3 years before I was retired. The backstory here is that as a book editor, I had always had in my mind to find somebody to write a general trade biography of Malcolm Cowley. And I looked around, and nobody presented themselves. So one fatal day on the bus going back home, the thought occurred to me that I would have to do it and that I should do it. And I worked really, really hard to make that thought go away, but I didn't. And now I'm an author, amazingly.
What was it in you that felt that it was necessary, that it's something you wanted out in the world?
Ever since I got out of college, I had a deep and abiding interest in American literature in general, and particularly in the 20th century. When I stumbled upon, happily, Malcolm Cowley's book, A Second Flowering, which was and is a series of portraits of his fellow travelers in the of the lost generation, including Hemingway, Faulkner, Fitzgerald, Cummings, and other important names. He seemed to me somebody I needed to read more of and take guidance from. And that's exactly what I did. Over the decades, I was so grateful to the way he helped me think about these particular writers and many others, and just the whole system of American literature in general.
What was it about him that made him so keen in what he looked at, what he looked for, what he decided to write about, and how he decided to write about it?
Well, he had something that we call good taste, which is not something necessarily that you're born with, but maybe you are, I don't know, but he had grown up with the century. He was born in 1898 in Pittsburgh, and he went to Harvard in 1915, and he began to associate with a lot of people who would later become absolutely key to American literature in the 20th century. While he was at Harvard, for instance, E.E. Cummings and John Dos Passos were there, and a lot of other really important names had recently graduated. Then he volunteered to be a ambulance driver or a munitions driver on the Western Front just before some months before the United States entered the war. And that was really key because so many important American writers, Cummings, Dos Passos, most conspicuously Hemingway, were also volunteers. And for some reason, they became the witnesses to this, literary witnesses to the Titanic event. So he was well-placed generationally. He was well-placed by virtue of his education and his experiences. He later, after the war ended, traveled to France and to the Left Bank in the early 20s. And he wasn't just there for the birth of that group of writers that came to be known as the Lost Generation. He was really one of them. He knew a great deal from the inside about the people and the trends that were going to characterize the American literature of the 20th century.
Gerald Howard is our guest, author of the new book, The Insider, Malcolm Cowley and the Triumph of American Literature. The subtitle of the book is The Triumph of American Literature. Give us a sense of how you use the word triumph, of what that means when it comes to Cowley's story.
The very strange thing was that in the Harvard for the class of 1915, you could not take a course in American literature except an upper level graduate course in Emerson, who was, of course, a Harvard graduate. But the same situation obtained all across the elite universities and colleges of the United States. It wasn't that there wasn't a body of work from the 19th century of considerable value, if I mention Melville and Hawthorne and Whitman, just right, for starters, for a variety of reasons. It wasn't considered a body of work worthy of academic study. For the real deal, for literature with a capital L, the country just had a habit of looking across to Europe, particularly England and France. That really, really changed over the course of the 20th century. And Cowley and the people in the Lost Generation were very, very important in making that happen. It really took off with a bang when Sinclair Lewis became the first American to win the Nobel Prize in, I think that was in the early 30s, and there have been plenty of American Nobel Prize winners afterwards. And now American literature is something that people around the world look to for respect and look to for guidance and find literary experiences. I would just cite one example that William Faulkner was a major, major influence on the writers of the Latin American boom, who would be Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Mario Vargas Llosa. That really hadn't happened in the late 19th or the early 20th century. So it's pretty triumphant in that sense.
In writing about his influence on reputations, of whether we're talking about Faulkner or Fitzgerald or Hemingway, and I assume it depends on who we're talking about, but generally, what do you think he saw in those writers that others perhaps had missed?
Well, in each particular case, I'll take the people you mentioned along the way. With Hemingway, what happened in the 40s was that when he edited a book called the Portable Hemingway, in his introduction, he drew a bright straight line from Hemingway's work to the work of Poe and Hawthorne and the early American writers that he referred to as our haunted nocturnal writers. That was a significant change because up to that point, people saw Hemingway as an artist of somewhat brute fact, but Cowley looked below the surface and saw that there was a great deal of subtle symbolism at play under the surface. He also intuited that a lot of Hemingway's work was based in the trauma of the war wound that he experienced from a mortar shell in Italy. In the case of Faulkner in particular, when I tell people this, they say, "What?" But it's true. Faulkner's career was on the verge of extinction in the middle 40s. There were some people who valued him, and there are a lot of other people who thought that reading him was too much work, or that the material that he was dealing with was too raw, kind of seedy. And it was Cowley who put together that Faulkner wasn't just writing one book and another book and another book. What he was perhaps semi-consciously about was crafting an entire mythology of the American South and its experiences with slavery and the Civil War and its defeat, and that it was almost mythic in its scope and nature. And that was a new way of looking at Faulkner. He demonstrated this quite brilliantly in a book called The Portable Faulkner, which had a brilliant critical introduction, and then put together episodes from Faulkner's work to demonstrate the broad history of his county, Yaknapatawpha County. And it's a pretty straight line from there to the 1949 Nobel Prize. It was a reclamation project of staggering importance.
You use a similar word in astonishing when you write in the chapter about literary politics. And you write, "The world of literature was increasingly consumed by urgent debates about its purpose, especially in relation to politics. No figure more tirelessly personified this era than Malcolm Cowley. A survey of his extracurricular activities in the political realm in the 30s is astonishing." Give us an example of what it was about him, and the fact that here was a guy who would often be helping to write a manifesto.
Well, that gets us into the nature of literature and politics in the 1930s, which was the left decade par excellence in American literature. And Cowley was hyperactive in those politics. He had been radicalized, as so many other American writers were, in the early years of the 30s, especially before FDR and the New Deal came along. There was vast human suffering in the United States of economic nature, and on top of which there was considerable repression of people who were trying to fight back. He saw the bonus marchers get routed in 1932. He went to Kentucky and just about escaped with his life on on a relief mission to bring some food for the striking mine workers. He saw the ugly side of the American system up very, very close, and it drove him, and it drove the people like him who came along with him way, way, way to the left. The problem was that going way, way, way to the left meant you came under the influence of the Communist Party. He was not a communist, but he was what was called a fellow traveler. So many American writers took their marching orders almost literally from the Communist Party. And what happened, unfortunately, towards the end of the decade was that they held on too long. They were blind to the nature of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union had Joseph Stalin had fashioned, and they believed in the truth of the Moscow show trials, and they became apologists for Stalin, Cowley and many others, but Cowley in particular, way, way, way too late in the decade. And they were made to suffer for it in the years and immediately after and then later. So that's the political side of the story. And it's kind of painful, really.
Talk a little bit, maybe not so much about the pain, but that what impact the exile and even his later rehabilitation had on him, and ultimately the impact that it had on his work as an editor and critic after that.
Well, he had been the literary editor of the New Republic for about 11 years, and that was a real power seat in American literature. And he did a very, very, very good job at it. But because of this political trouble that I mentioned, he was semi-cashiered. He was taken off the firing line as an editor and reduced to a mere contributor. And so he, ha in effect, he engaged in almost a literal retreat, in the sense that he moved back to his farmhouse in Sherman, Connecticut, and he got a living grant from the Mellon Foundation that allowed him to get off this hamster wheel he'd been on much of his life of reading and reviewing and reading and reviewing week after week after week. And what he could do now that the wolf was away from the door for a bit was to read and think and read and think. And he read very, very deeply in American literature, not just in the 20th century, but back to the 19th century. And he began to formulate a set of opinions about which writers and which works constituted the canon of American literature that, to a large extent, we follow to this day.
We're speaking about Malcolm Cowley and the new book, The Insider by Gerald Howard, just out from Penguin Press. In your experience, and given your experience, what do you think Cowley's story ultimately tells us about the work that editors do and that labor that so many of us don't see, as well as criticism that enters into it, critics and criticism that enters into it as well, of what Cowley's story tells us about this literary culture?
I think what you can take away from the story of Malcolm Cowley is that one person, one editor, who is well placed and determined, can make a tremendous difference in the direction of a country's literature and in the books that we value. Let me give some examples. I've spoken about the rehabilitation of Faulkner. When he was an editor of the New Republic in the early 30s, he published the first story by an 18-year-old by the name of John Cheever, launching his career and helping connect him with the New Yorker. When he was a consulting editor for the Viking Press in the early 50s, he literally spent almost 5 years convincing Viking that they needed to publish a book by the title of On the Road by Jack Kerouac. Viking was really nervous about that for reasons of possible obscenity litigation and libel, and maybe just in terms of haste. But Cowley persevered and they published it, and it's probably the most important book that Viking ever published over its 100-year history. And then 4 years later, he did something similar when he was a writing teacher at Stanford, when he discovered a former wrestler novelist by the name of Ken Kesey, and helped Kesey write his novel One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which had just a tremendous effect on the counterculture, on the way we view madness and sanity. And those are three pretty spectacular examples of what one editor can do to shape a country's literature.
Do you ever feel or look at or think in the way of that you came ever came close to that?
Oh, hardly. But I had a really wonderful career, and I did manage to publish writers of importance: David Foster Wallace, Don DeLillo, Walter Mosley, to name just three. So I had a good run, and I'm proud of being able to work with talented people like that. It's everything for an editor to work with talent and to help bring books into the world that have an effect and that you know are going to last.
The name of the book is The Insider, Malcolm Cowley and the Triumph of American Literature by Gerald Howard. It is published by Penguin Press. Gerald, thank you so much for sharing with us. A delight to speak with you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. And thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you very much. Be
Okay.
well. Again, the name of the book is The Insider by Gerald Howard. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.